delighted to have you with us. Going to have a show today where we're going to follow the money and be talking about things that I think are going to be very helpful to you, possibly a bit depressing at times, but that's the way it goes. My guest is Tom O'Rourke. He is an attorney based in the Rockville, Maryland area, and I have known Tom and worked with him for many, many years. In fact, the first time I saw him, he was at a conference in on the West Coast, and I was just popping in to see these different seminars and just sort of pay my respects and leave. And I stayed, I think your session was all day.
It was a good part of the day. Yeah,
and I stayed for whatever it was, 6 hours. Just absolutely fascinating. And Tom is a tax expert, expert in wills, trust, you name it. And we thought, without capitalizing on a horrific event, but the fact that Monday, 12 federal workers went to their jobs at the Navy Yard, and were shot down in a, you know, an unbelievable way, in a massacre, and others were wounded. And the point is that it doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter what your occupation is, you never know when your number is up. And this is, so this is a very appropriate time for people to sort of do a check, reality check.
That's certainly true, Mike. One of the points I like to make to people, When they know I'm going to talk about estate planning, they sort of tune me out. Well, estate planning is for rich people. I'm not rich. I don't need to worry about that. What they don't realize is that many very, very simple tools that are part of an estate plan are important to everybody. And the incidents at the Navy Yard kind of bring that home in a really awful and dramatic way.
Well, and the tax implications, too, so having something like maybe you'll tell us the difference. I know there's a trust. There's a irrevocable trust and the revocable trust.
Sure. There are as many types of trust as you can think of reasons for creating trust. Probably the most common one that many people use is a revocable trust, meaning one that you retain the right to revoke or change. It's a very, very common tool used by many estate planners. It's designed to allow people to maintain control of their own affairs and to be able to change their plan anytime they want. So that probably is the most common type of a trust.
Well, the subject of today's column, my federal report, was millionaire federal workers, and it's a slightly misleading because so many of the people who are thrift savings plan millionaires brought the money with them. These are wealthy attorneys who became federal judges or members of Congress who made a lot of money in the private sector, or in some cases married a lot of money in the private sector and brought it with them into Congress and put it in the thrift savings plan. But there's something like 900 plus federal workers, if you will, who are TSP millionaires. They have accounts in excess of a million. And I heard from a woman this morning, she was a revenue agent, and I know you used to be with the IRS. She was a revenue agent. She started as a GS-7. She's now a 14, she said, and she has $925,000 in her TSP. So she's done it the old-fashioned way, you know, investing and buying low and holding on when it gets high.
That little story you just related is becoming very common. The thrift plan has been around now for approaching 30 years, and people who have risen through the ranks, who contributed regularly, and who've got government matching contributions have done really well, even if they invested relatively conservatively. And I do a lot of speaking at retirement seminars, planning for retirement seminars for federal employees, and I regularly deal with people who have balances of more than $500,000. And these are not senior executives. These are people that are grades 9, 10, 11, 12 that have just been very methodical about it. They put aside a little bit of money every 2 weeks. They don't even notice it, and before you know it, they really have quite a nest egg.
And stay the course. I have two friends who couldn't take it when the market dipped in 2008, and they got out of stocks and went into the G fund and have remained in the G fund. The problem is knowing when to come back and having the nerve to come back. But had they stayed, had they continued to buy the C and the S and the I fund, had they continued to buy those at bargain basement prices, they'd be much better off today.
You're absolutely right. Probably the best financial advice I ever heard. I was visiting a financial advisor, and I was waiting to meet with him. and his secretary had received a call. And I obviously only heard one end of the call, but her comment to the caller was, well, the way I deal with this is I just don't look at my account balance when the market goes down. And that really is the philosophy you have to adopt.
Yeah.
I still remember there was a very famous investment advisor with Fidelity Investments named Peter Lynch, who was very, very popular in the 1980s and 1990s. And I read a book by him, and he said, market corrections of 20% are about as uncommon as snow in the Twin Cities in February.
Yeah.
In other words, it happens, but you have to ignore it.
Yeah, and if you can get into the mindset that you didn't lose or make any money that day because of the market, because the only day it counts is the day you cash out.
Yeah, I know because of the nature of the work I do, and my law firm has a 401k plan, which works. It's virtually identical to the thrift plan, and people know what I do. And when the market's down, I say, Tom, what are you doing? Are you selling?
Nothing.
And my question is always the same. Are you planning on retiring tomorrow?
Yeah.
And of course, I know they're not.
Yeah.
And I say, forget about it. The market's going to go down, and it's going to go up, but over time, it's going to go up.
Yeah.
Now, what people who liked your revenue agent – who diligently from the time she was a GS7 until now has done is she's put aside money into her thrift savings plan account. It's grown. And many times people do amass significant amounts of money. And if you live in roughly half of the states have a state tax. And there are steps you can take to minimize estate taxes if you only know you have a problem. And you at least need to think about estate tax planning if you've got at least $1 million in assets. Now, I know $1 million is a lot of money, but it includes a lot of things. It typically, the things that are really valuable are things you can't spend.
Like a house?
Like a house. Uh-huh. Like a life insurance policy. You've got $200,000 worth of life insurance. It's not worth a nickel till you die.
Yeah.
But that's part of that $1 million. You have money in the thrift plan. For most federal employees, that's their single biggest asset, but you can't access it while you're an active employee. So it's a good idea not just to say, well, I'm a federal employee. I don't have a lot of money. I don't need to think about this stuff.
Yeah, I think a lot of federal workers have inferiority complexes, too. They read that they're overpaid. They know, in fact, that they're not. They get furloughed and all of that sort of thing. But say a typical federal worker in the Washington area, I think the average salary now is something like $85,000-$90,000. You know, you've been here a while. You may be married. You may be divorced. May have a house. What does that person need in the estate planning?
Well,
the basic
tools everybody needs, and this applies to the people who's got to borrow money to go to Starbucks to get a cup of coffee. The basic thing they need are powers of attorney. Because you never know when you could become incapacitated. Anybody who drives on 395 or the Beltway or 270 is just minutes away from being incapacitated. And powers of attorney, both a financial power of attorney and a medical power of attorney, are documents that allow somebody you love and trust to step in and make decisions for you if you can't make those decisions for yourself. So the absolute minimum in every estate plan are powers of attorney. And for those of you who if you go see a lawyer, every lawyer is going to tell you you need that. If you don't want to go to a lawyer, all the local states have uniform powers of attorney that can be simply downloaded from the Internet. And it's absolutely essential that they have that.
Okay, taking a short break here on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com. Be right back.
Ask the CIO is brought to you by Learning Tree International. Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government.
Iftikhar Jamil is the NOAA Assistant CIO for weather.
We migrated our high-performance computing to a whole new capability. In the past, we used to run our own hardwares and things like that. Now we are procuring services. We have more than doubled our capacity from 90 terabytes to about 213 terabytes.
Listen to Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Get impacted empowered with the IT skills you need to improve performance and help your agency achieve its goals. LearningTree is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government, and they're on GSA IT 70 and MOBIS 874 schedules, which means all levels of the government and qualified contractors get the best tuition savings possible. Save even more with LearningTree's 50% off select IT and management courses each week. For 50% tuition savings, go to LearningTree.com/CIO. That's LearningTree.com/CIO.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Battlegrounds change, front lines evolve, but defense does not stop. How will you face down new threats with fewer dollars? Turn to Deloitte. We help leaders from CEOs to four-star generals deliver innovative, efficient solutions. With our private sector insight and public sector experience in technology, supply chain, analytics, and more, we'll help you shape the future of the DoD. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Do you hear that? That's a zettabyte. The amount of data the world generates every 6 months. 5 times more data than the combined storage of every hard drive on Earth. In a sea of data this huge, Raytheon Cyber Solutions deliver security, efficiency, and resiliency. After all, when your mission is cyber, every bit matters. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's a hurricane, packing winds at 100 miles per hour. But we're keeping forecasters ahead of the storm with the world's most advanced weather monitoring capabilities. It's another way Raytheon technology helps civil and government agencies collect, process, and share intelligence with renowned precision. After all, when your mission is predicting the weather, the forecast calls for innovation. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
Are you paying too much on your credit card annual percentage rates? Get the State Department Federal Credit Union credit card with a low 6.99 annual percentage rate. The SDFCU Visa Platinum card has EMV chip-enabled technology. This provides added security when spending overseas, and you'll save with no foreign transaction fees. Also, enjoy a generous rewards program and earn points toward even more travel. Visit SDFCU.org to apply online today. That's SDFCU.org. SDFCU is federally insured by NCUA Equal Opportunity Lending.
What makes PowerJobs.com powerful? It's you. PowerJobs.com was created for you, the Washington area professional working in federal contracting, nonprofit and association industries, technology, and government relations. PowerJobs.com features thousands of top-level openings from hundreds of the region's leading employers. There's already been 2 million job searches on PowerJobs.com so far this year. Tap into the power of PowerJobs.com, a career site made for you. PowerJobs.com. Empowering today's top talent.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey, and my guest is Tom O'Rourke. He's a Washington area attorney based in Rockville, Maryland. And we're talking about wills, trusts, that sort of thing. And, you know, in light of the tragedy at the Navy Yard, none of those 12 people expected anything to happen that day. They went to work, and 12 of them did not return home, maybe others. But obviously this can happen any time. The best plans of men go astray. Lauren Larson, our producer, got a call from Ray in Germantown, Maryland, and he says, funding an irrevocable trust, is it a good idea to put retirement and thrift savings plan in an irrevocable trust? Is there a better option?
Mike, funding a revocable trust is always a good idea. If it's not funded, it doesn't work. But there are some assets that cannot be placed in the trust. The big category of assets that cannot be owned by the trust are tax-deferred assets like the thrift plan, IRAs, 401k plans, and any federal retirement or Social Security benefits you're entitled to. So it's a good idea to fund a trust, but not with the TSP or any other tax-deferred assets.
All right, good question.
But really, the better way to handle that, many times people will want maybe a minor child or somebody who's not capable of managing assets to be the real beneficiary of money in the TSP, but they're concerned about their ability to manage money. They can name the trust the beneficiary of those funds. So it's very, very important to make sure your beneficiary designations, really for all your federal benefits, are consistent with your wishes.
Okay. And I remember you and I had a discussion a long, long time ago doing wills and things. And I believe you said, in my case, divorced for adult children, and you said the children are often a good person to make the executor of your estate, you know, assuming you trust them, they're not mad at you. And I believe you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, that all things being equal, if the oldest one is good enough, pick the oldest one because the others are used to deferring to them. Does that make sense?
That's not a bad idea.
Uh-huh.
There can be, obviously, family dynamics always play a role in doing that. I'll never forget one very sweet lady said, Tom, I want you to be my trustee. Mm-hmm. And I said, why? She said, well, because in my mother's estate, we all ended up hating the executor. And she said, Tom, to be honest with you, I don't care if my kids don't like you.
That's right. Well, and that's a good point. You know, you hear from people that it's a highly emotional time, whether you like the parent or not. And when the people get into fights and family splits over, I wanted that 29-cent vase from Woolworths. You know,
it happens all the time. My favorite story is the fight over the wicker chicken. Mom had a wicker chicken in which she put envelopes or bills or whatever, and it became something that had a lot of sentimental value. And four children fought for the better part of the day in my conference room until eventually my paralegal went out to Pier 1, bought four wicker chickens, marked them all up. Nobody could tell which one was Mom's and made them all happy.
Absolutely. That's when you need a good lawyer. Okay, well, back to square one here. Your federal worker, typical federal worker, making a typical salary. You may or may not be married. You may or may not have a house. You said they need a power of attorney. And you're talking about a medical power of attorney here?
A medical power of attorney and a financial power of attorney. That's important. That's essential for everybody. But it's really important to emphasize you need to be careful who you pick as your agent. You are giving your agent total control, if it's financial, over all your financial assets. So you need to make sure you pick somebody who has absolute maximum financial integrity and has your best interest at heart.
That is a tall order.
It's a very tall order because taking care of a disabled individual can be very, very difficult and very demanding. Now, people generally tend to think of this in the context of taking care of their elderly parents, and that is a fairly typical situation. But there are also situations where very young people need powers of attorney. I'll never forget when I told my two 20-something sons they needed powers of attorney. My one son said, Dad, those are for people that are old and decrepit like you and
like
Mom,
you. Uh-huh.
Not for somebody like me. And then I reminded him of his high school classmate who's been basically bedridden since he went out to a prom and drank too much and got involved in an accident. It really can happen to anybody. Don't like to be morbid, but it's something that is very, very easy to implement. If you don't want to go see a lawyer, at least go online and get the proper power of attorney form for your state and fill it out, have it witnessed, have it notarized. At least it's something that's available if the worst does happen.
Now, if you're a minor, there's no need for that, correct?
No, if you're a minor, your parents have both the right and a responsibility to make decisions on your behalf. So if you're under 18, you don't need to have powers of attorney for your kids. But when your child turns 18, then they're independent adults. And for anybody who has children who are in college, you probably got the same nasty surprise that I got. I got the bills to pay the tuition, but I wasn't entitled to see the grades because of privacy concerns. And they said my child was an adult. And the same holds true with respect to powers of attorney.
Yeah, I want to find out how you solve that one. But the same-sex marriages is suddenly it's upon us. It's the law of the land. How are you getting a lot of traffic in that area?
That's probably the single most significant area of interest in the field of estate planning right now, because the Windsor decision, a decision that was handed down by the Supreme Court, it's a sea change in the area of estate planning, tax planning for same-sex couples. If you are married to a person of your sex, you're married for all purposes under federal law. That's true for tax reasons. That's true for Social Security benefits. It's true for federal retirement benefits. Same-sex couples are now treated the same as any other married couple. The key determination always is, were you legally married in a state that recognizes same-sex marriages?
Yeah, so it doesn't matter where you live, but it's where you were married?
Well, for federal purposes, yes. That was a big issue that the IRS and, I believe, Social Security has recently answered. If you get married in a state like Maryland that recognizes same-sex marriage, and you're validly married in Maryland, and then you move to Virginia, which does not recognize same-sex marriage, for all purposes under federal law, you're treated as married, even though you live in a state that doesn't recognize same-sex marriage.
Okay, and then would there be a liability to being in Maryland? Being in Virginia because of the state not recognizing marriage?
Well, yes, because for purposes of state law, you would be treated as two single individuals living together, and you wouldn't have the same rights that other married couples would have. Even though you live in Virginia, you still would have a right to file a joint federal income tax return if you chose to do so. I don't know how the state of Virginia has handled that at the state level. I would assume that because their law does not recognize same-sex marriages, you couldn't file a joint Virginia income tax return.
Yeah, and that went in Virginia. The tax they say they don't have a tax. They do, but they say they don't have one.
Well, they don't have an estate tax, but they got a whole bunch of other taxes.
Yeah, personal property and
personal
things.
Property income taxes. Virtually, I believe about 40 out of the 50 states have state income taxes, and in many states. In many situations, filing a joint return with your spouse can save you money. But a state like Virginia and most of the other states that do not recognize same-sex marriage don't offer the right to file jointly because they don't recognize the same-sex marriage.
Are you seeing just in your practice and just from the queries you're getting that people, same-sex couples who are married, are moving to that state or moving to a state like Maryland or the District of Columbia that is more friendly to them just for a variety of reasons?
I haven't seen that, Mike, simply because the decision permitting that was just rendered in June of this year, only 3 months ago, perhaps long term. I do know when I speak about this in seminars, I tell people that obviously if you're in a same-sex relationship and are contemplating marriage, it's better to be in a state that recognizes it than in a state that doesn't recognize it.
Yeah, makes sense.
And whether you're going to move or not, many times are personal factors totally unrelated to legal considerations that determine where you want to live.
Great. Okay. Short break here on Federal News Radio at federalnewsradio.com. We'll be right back.
Achieve continuous monitoring through the Security Connected Framework from McAfee. Built on more than two decades of proven security practices, the Security Connected approach helps agencies improve security posture, optimize security for greater cost effectiveness, and align security strategically with mission objectives. Visit futureagency.com to learn more. That's futureagency.com. For each unique visitor to futureagency.com, $1 will be donated to the Wounded Warrior Project.
Life is filled with uncertainty, military life especially. AFMA can help you breathe easy through it all. Since 1879, AFMA has helped military families with low-cost military life insurance and the best survivor assistance. We're experts at helping you manage the complexities of military life and securing your family's financial well-being. Call 1-877-398-2263 today or go to aafmaa.com to see how we can help you.
Agency of the Month is brought to you by CenturyLink from this month's agency, Department of the Navy.
Nick Erden is Director of Transformation for the Navy. He describes a game to develop business practices.
It's kind of like a card game. We set out a handful of seed cards, cards that just start the incubatorial process of ideating on a concept. And we lay down those idea cards, and they're fairly short. Each card then gets played on by one of the players.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com.
The secret to being successful is never slowing down. Your agency's mission doesn't have a pause button, and with CenturyLink as your trusted technology partner, you don't have to slow down. Their visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions are backed by dedicated responsive support. Pause button not included. To learn more about how CenturyLink keeps you up and rolling 24/7, 365, visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov.
The fabled Dream Team. You find them in sports, in music, and now healthcare has one too. Kaiser Permanente. How do we do it? It starts with recruiting. Hire the great from top medical schools across the country. Next, practice, practice, practice. Let doctors practice their passion. Patient care. Less time on paperwork means more time with patients. And finally, teamwork. Our technology connects 8.7 million members with their doctors and thousands of caregivers with each other, allowing doctors across the hall or across the country to easily share knowledge. With this information exchange, we've helped reduce serious heart attacks by 62%. So here's a rousing, fist-pumping cheer for our medical dream team. Join us at kp.org to choose your doctor or change anytime. We believe our members deserve nothing less. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Study conducted in Northern California, 2001 through 2010. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Would you trust someone with disabilities to test high-tech protective combat gear? Our armed forces do. Source America provides the military with a highly trained, exceptional workforce, people with significant disabilities. In fact, Source America provides vital expertise to thousands of federal customers across the country. For everything from contract closeouts to food service to call center support. Learn more at sourceamerica.org. An Ability One authorized enterprise.
Mosquitoes thrive in wet environments, which might seem strange in one respect. How do their fragile bodies survive the impact of raindrops 50 times their weight? Mosquitoes have long wings and legs, so they just get momentarily spun in the air when a raindrop applies a glancing blow, says David Hu, a Georgia Tech engineer. He used high-speed videos to show even in a direct hit because the insect's so light.
The mosquito and the drop, they sort of join together, and they fall together for about 5 to 20 body lengths before separating.
That's only a problem very close to the ground. So Hu says engineers making tiny robotic flyers could mimic a mosquito's lightweight design to reduce the force of any impacts. And
we think if designers build in these long appendages, it'll basically allow them to always separate from the colliding object without even trying.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here and talking with Tom O'Rourke. He is a Washington area attorney based in Rockville and is a specialist in estate planning and trusts and that sort of thing. Tom, you were mentioning power of attorney, and obviously there are several kinds. There's a medical power of attorney.
Right.
And a financial power of attorney.
Right. Medical powers of attorney allow somebody to make medical decisions for you if you can't make them for yourself. Mm-hmm. And they also set forth what your wishes are in the event you're ever terminally ill and in a vegetative state. So that is one very important document that everybody needs. It's got no relationship to the size of your bank account. The other document is somebody to manage your financial affairs. And many people say, well, there's nothing to manage. Well, there is. Everybody's got to file a tax return. Many people have to apply for federal benefits, whether it be Social Security or or retirement or whatever. And if you can't do it, somebody needs to do it for you. So those are two basic tools. The other thing that people always need to think about, and typically what they do think about when they're doing estate planning, is how do they distribute their assets following their death? And the two tools are really, there are a variety of tools that allow them to do that. Number one, you can designate a beneficiary. For many federal employees, the most important part of their estate plan are their beneficiary designations, because that's where all their, to the extent they have any wealth, that's where it is. Thrift plan, life insurance, retirement benefits, those are all controlled by beneficiary designations. But it's also prudent for everybody to have either a will or a revocable trust. By using either a will or a revocable trust, you can distribute your assets to anybody you want in any way you want. You can leave assets in trust. You can distribute them outright. You can leave all your assets to your kids if you want to. You can leave all your assets to one kid and nothing to the other one. You really can do pretty much whatever you want. The big advantage of using a will is it's usually easier and less expensive to implement. You tell your lawyer what you want. He or she drafts the will. When it's done to your satisfaction, you sign it. The disadvantage of a will is following your death, your will is subject to probate. Probate is the court-supervised process for winding up the affairs of a deceased individual. And typically, it's criticized because of its cost. And according to Money Magazine, that's anywhere from 3 to 5%. The delay, it takes time. It can take up to a year, even in a relatively simple, straightforward estate. And publicity. Probate records are public records. If you want to see somebody's will and you know they've died and it's been at the probate, you simply go down to the court and pick it up.
I think Charles Dickens, Bleak House,
oh, yeah.
You know, the dullest, oh, yeah. Most awful book ever written, but is about somebody being in chancery court or probate court.
They were in probate court, I think, for the better part of a generation.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Bleak House was the book that gives lawyers a bad name. Now, we lawyers don't need any help in giving us a bad name, but Bleak House certainly does the job, because I think in Bleak House, they ended up spending all the money, a sizable fortune, on legal fees, and the ultimate beneficiaries ended up getting nothing. Now, hopefully, probate is never quite like Bleak House. Probate can be cumbersome, and many times there are battles that arise among family members during the probate process. Because of Bleak House and many other horror stories involving probate, many people want to try to avoid it if at all possible. And the typical way, the very common way to avoid it, is to create a revocable or revocable trust, meaning one you can revoke or change. The big advantage of the revocable trust is it allows you to do whatever you want. If your goals are legal, you can accomplish those goals through your trust. The disadvantage is, once you create the trust, you have to fund it. You've got to transfer title to your assets into your trust. Your house, your car, your bank accounts, your brokerage account, virtually everything except tax-deferred benefits like the thrift plan or retirement benefits or Social Security benefits. So it takes a little more time, effort, and expense to create the revocable trust. But the huge advantage of it is it allows your heirs to avoid probate after you die and makes the settlement of your estate quicker and less expensive and more expeditious.
Is a 401k plan automatically rolled into a revocable trust?
No, it's not. You can designate your revocable trust as beneficiary of your 401k plan. If you do that, at the time of your death, the trustee of your trust contacts the administrator of your 401k plan and directs that the assets be paid, and then they would be put into the trust.
Okay, and then your will would...
Then your trust specifies what happens with the money once it gets there.
Because I think I've done that with one of my 401ks, but I don't think I know I haven't done it with my house, which I should do.
You should.
Well, anything else, kind of wrapping up here, because, again, life is short. We never know.
Yeah. I always tell people that when you do estate planning, you always plan for the worst and hope for the best. When people go to work in the morning, they expect to work, they expect to get tired, they expect to be frustrated, but they also expect to be able to come home and healthy at the end of the day. Sometimes that doesn't always happen, and it's rather ironic we're talking about this. I know we talked about this show and my appearance on this show long before the events that happened 2 days ago at the Navy Yard, but that is just another very, very dramatic, very horrible reminder of how fragile life can be. And in dealing with estate planning, it's not a lot of fun, but it's something you need to think about. It can make administration of your affairs a lot easier in the event something happens to you. It certainly can make things a lot easier for your loved ones in the event something horrible does happen to you.
Yeah, well, it forces you to confront your own mortality.
It does, and for that reason, many people put off doing it. Let's face it, going to talk to a lawyer many times about your own death is not something people look forward to.
Yeah, do it on a bright, sunny day when you're feeling good. Huh?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
All right. So we get power of attorney, revocable trust. Dumb question. What's an irrevocable trust?
Irrevocable trust is one that once it's created, you cannot revoke or change it. And every time I think of that, I think of the example of I had a client of mine who came to me and he said, Tom, I want to change my irrevocable trust. Mm-hmm. I said, why do you want to change your irrevocable trust? Uh-huh. He said, because I created it for the benefit of my ex-wife.
Uh-huh.
I said, what part of the word irrevocable do you not understand?
Yeah.
So there are advantages, there are reasons why people would want to create an irrevocable trust. The huge disadvantage is that you better be darn sure what you want, because once it's in place, you give up the flexibility to revoke or change it.
That seems incredible somehow. I mean, A, that anybody would do it.
Well, I mean, the main reason people do it is it helps minimize estate taxes.
Yeah.
And estate taxes at the federal level used to be very onerous. The estate tax rate until January of this year could have been as high as 55%, and the estate tax exemption previously was $1 million. And so if you're going to lose 55% of anything in excess of $1 million, you're willing to take some fairly dramatic steps to minimize that tax.
Yeah.
Irrevocable trusts are still reasons for using them, but with the change in the tax law now, as a result of the tax law changes that took effect the first of this year, the first $5.25 million is totally exempt from tax, so most people no longer are willing to consider irrevocable trust.
Very good. Well, Lauren Larson, our producer, has volunteered to have my medical power of attorney, so she's gonna look out for me. But thank you so much for coming
in, Tom.
Thank
you,
Mike. We'll do this again.
Good to see you again.
Thank you. We'll take a short break here on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com, and we'll be right back to talk with Sean Riley from the Federal Times.
How is National Defense University's iCollege expanding its missions as a global hub for educating, informing, and connecting information age leaders? What about the iCollege's Cyber Beacon program? How is NDU's iCollege continuing to enhance its global perspective? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and a lot more with Dr. Robert Childs, Chancellor of the Information Resources Management College, iCollege, at the National Defense University, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Power of Attorney Radio, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Mr. Joseph Caro of the United States Coast Guard, who's going to be talking about boating safety. Power of Attorney is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Reston and servicing the entire D.C. metro area. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
And now, Technology Insights with Tom Frana, President CEO of Vion Corporation, speaking with Hugh Yoshida, Vice President CTO for Hitachi Data Systems.
If flash is the hot topic today, a year, 18 months, 2 years from now, what do you think the hot topic's going to be?
It's not just about storage, it's about getting information from that, okay? And so people are talking about big data. The thing about big data is really about getting value from that data. It's doing analysis. It's key value storage. It's complex event processing. So we're going to start having to be a lot smarter to be able to get different varieties of data, seeing the intersections of the data, and seeing the value that comes from that.
Vion and Hitachi Data Systems Federal Corporation develop IT services and solutions delivered by Vion. This proven 33-year partnership helps agencies improve IT cost and agility by being responsive, creative, and committed. Tap into the power of teaming with Vion. Visit Vion.com.
True innovation means anticipating challenges before they occur. Lockheed Martin was early to recognize the changing nature of naval warfare. New types of threats in coastal waters called for a new kind of combat ship. We responded with deep thinking for shallow waters, designing the littoral combat ship with speed, agility, and the most networked sensors of any surface combatant. And to make sure commanders stay one step ahead of evolving missions, the LCS is built on a flexible C-frame with interchangeable mission modules. It offers the operational flexibility to execute focused missions such as anti-submarine, mine, and surface warfare, providing access and dominance in the coastal battle space like never before. The LCS is one more example of our ongoing commitment to those who are meeting the security challenges of today and tomorrow. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
Congress recently returned to work with a crowded agenda. Lawmakers tackle three major tasks related to the federal budget: set annual agency funding for the new fiscal year that kicks off October 1st, come up with an alternative to the automatic spending constraints known as sequestration, which are set to take an even bigger bite from federal spending in 2014, and negotiate a raise to the borrowing limit before the government defaults on its obligations.
Hi, I'm Trish Gilbert, Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. I've been an air traffic controller for more than 21 years. I chose this career because it gave me the chance to do something very important. Air traffic controllers like me take great pride in working hard to ensure the safety of 70,000 flights a day in U.S. airspace. We strive to reach the highest level of professionalism. So on your next flight, sit back and relax. We'll guide you home safely. Visit NATCA.org.
October is Cybersecurity Month, and the Association for Information Resources Management invites you to an informative educational program focusing on national security over lunch on Thursday, October 10 at Clyde's of Gallery Place. Hear from government leaders from NIST, DHS, GSA, and the Army talking about policies that are impacting and enabling the cyber mission. Plus, how can industry impact and improve national security? What are the key solutions we need to strengthen our nation's security? Find out. Register today for Affirm's monthly briefing at affirm.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or...
This is a coordinated monthly test of the broadcast and cable stations in your area. Equipment that can quickly warn you during emergencies is being tested. If this had been an actual emergency, official messages would have followed this alert tone. This concludes our test of the emergency alert.
That emergency alert will get your attention. I'm Mike Causey, welcome back to your turn. Next up is Sean Riley. He's a senior writer with the Federal Times. And Sean, are you with us?
I am. Good to be with you, Mike.
So, yeah, sorry for the test cutting into our time. There's so much going on. I'm just going to step back. What are you working on? What are you looking at?
Well, we're obviously keeping an eye on the budget situation. That's a topic of enormous interest to our readership and to your listeners as well. As we all know, there are less than 2 weeks to go before the end of the fiscal year. At this point, Congress has not passed any of the dozen appropriations bills for FY14, and it is also far from certain where it's going to go on approval for any kind of continuing resolution, a stopgap spending bill to keep things, keep the lights on after September 30th. The House leadership last week had unveiled a continuing resolution that was essentially more or less a clean bill, would have just kept agencies funded at their current post-sequester spending levels. But it seems that there is a significant proportion of the Republican membership in the House that wants the bill to explicitly include language that would defund the 2010 health care overhaul, widely known as Obamacare. And the question is now what the leadership is going to do and whether they're going to try and move that kind of bill, which would, is going to run into, is going to go nowhere in the Senate, and, which the president has also said he will not consider.
Right, and he said that he won't deal with them on the debt ceiling either, that it's you take it or leave it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like both sides are staying in their corners. The problem is the time is running out. There are only just a couple of legislative working days scheduled between now and the end of the end of the month, and it's it's not quite clear how we're going to get from point A to point B.
Well, you wonder how, if anybody ever learns any lessons. The last time we had a government shutdown of any significance was the winter of 1995-96, mm-hmm. And that was President Clinton versus Newt Gingrich. And many things happened, but when the dust settled, or the snow settled in that case, everybody got paid. And the public opinion was dramatically against the Republicans, and Gingrich left shortly thereafter. And I saw a Pew Research poll just the other day, and it said, if there is a government shutdown, who are you going to blame? And they did it by Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. But in almost every case, the House Republicans were on the wrong end of the disapproval stick.
That's very interesting. I think... you've got a real generational divide among Republicans between those who were around, and Speaker Boehner, John Boehner, is one of those who was around in 95-96 and remember how Republicans got hammered, and those who have come, arrived in Congress much more recently believe that they are on a mission essentially to block Obamacare from taking effect, and the heck with the consequences.
Yeah, what's up with the Postal Service these days?
Well, they're still in business, which a year or two ago they might have. There was some question about whether they were going to survive or run out of money. Next week, at the end of the month, they're supposed to make about a $5.5 billion payment into the retiree health care fund. This is essentially pre-funding retiree health care. They've said pretty much for the last year they're not going to be able to make that one, so this will be the third year in which they defaulted. When this first happened, there was some alarm what the consequence would be. Now it seems the reaction is essentially a shrug of the shoulders. And then next month, about the middle of October, they're supposed to make around a $1.4 billion payment to cover their workers' comp bills. And unlike last couple of years, there doesn't seem any question they will be able to make it. So they're actually doing a little better. There is a hearing scheduled tomorrow in the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee on postal legislation. You're going to have a lot of the usual suspects, the Postmaster General, head of the Postal Regulatory Commission, representatives of the unions and mailing industry. But it doesn't seem at this point, particularly with everything else going on in Congress, that there's much likelihood of any kind of significant legislation passing this year.
Well, I'm going to ask you something, and then correct me if I'm wrong, but other federal agencies, as I understand it, are not required to pre-fund their retirement. It's sort of an ongoing thing. You're retired, I'm paying in my 7% or whatever, and that's the way it works. And the Postal Service is that correct?
That's right. I mean, I think there might be a couple of smaller agencies, ones that don't primarily defend on taxpayer money, but the Postal Service is clearly the largest of those. And, this was done essentially back in the 2006 Postal Reform Bill, to in part to make sure that the the legislation scored well, according to in terms of its potential impact on the deficit. It's a very long story, but the funding schedule, which is very aggressive for the Postal Service to pre-fund its retiree health care benefits, had a lot more to do with with CBO scoring techniques than it did with the actual need to, with any kind of real-world need.
Those things cause so much problem because while they solve an accounting situation for the moment, then and when they linger on, it becomes something like this. And the postal unions, the American Postal Workers Union and the National Association of Letter Carriers, have argued all along that the service would be in good shape if it didn't have to pre-fund this.
Yeah, and it would certainly be in better shape, I think, or at least on paper. I mean, now, this is the Postal Service is as in, by the end of this month, it'll have blown through more than $16 billion of required payments that it hasn't made. It'll have defaulted on all of those. And, essentially those just show up on paper. The Postal Service officials are concerned that this creates questions of uncertainty over its future when you're seeing these still count against, show up on its balance sheet and create this impression of these rivers of red ink. The Postmaster General expressed concern that it's hurting the image of the Postal Service and creating questions about its viability. But I think overall, the Postal Service would still be in trouble because of the shift to the Internet, even if it weren't for this particular requirement.
Well, if we have a shutdown, and the target date for that, again, is when?
Well, end of the fiscal year is September 30th,
okay.
So presumably it would
this
be October,
month.
Yeah, be with within the next 2 weeks.
Right, and they were talking about a continuing resolution last time we talked that would run through December 15th, and even that is in trouble now.
Right, the House leadership had hoped to vote on that late last week. They had to pull the bill because they couldn't get support within their own caucus, and again, they're hoping to vote on it this week, but it's doubtful or appears doubtful at this point that they can get the votes, Republican votes they need to pass it without including some kind of language that would defund Obamacare.
John, I'll throw you a curve here because it's not on the agenda, but with the killings at the Navy Yard today, there are all these questions about how did this guy get with his track record, how did he get a security clearance? And I remember 4 or 5, maybe more years ago, there was a big push to streamline the security process to make it faster, quicker, to cut the time, and I think it was 200 days or something like that, almost a year, to cut it back, to make them go faster. And now it's down to an average, I believe, of 44 days. You think they went too far with this?
Well, it's hard to know, but you can definitely, and I'm glad you brought this up, it's definitely going to raise some questions about exactly how the shooter, did get the clearance. I mean, he was a, former Navy reservist. And had a secret clearance despite, a record of misconduct when he was with the Navy, although he did get an honorable discharge. And then back in 2004, he shot out the tires of a car. So it's definitely going to reawaken questions about whether in fact, the pendulum has swung too far. I mean, this was a big, the effort to speed up the process was a big effort within the Defense Department. The feeling was it was dragging on too long, keeping people from, getting jobs, bringing people on board as quickly as they needed to. But, of course, this comes, not long after the similar questions have been raised about how Edward Snowden, the contractor for the National Security Agency, who has leaked significant amounts of secret information on how he got a clearance. So there's already activity in Congress to tighten up the process, and I think you're just going to see this incident will accelerate those efforts.
Right. Well, the shooting episodes with the one guy, and then in Snowden's case, he left the Army after about 4 months. I mean, there's a lot of unusual things, a lot of red flags there.
Mm-hmm. And, as we've talked about before, you have a huge number of people with clearances, secret or top secret, close to 5 million.
Many of them are not federal workers, correct?
Right, exactly. A large percentage are contractors.
Sean, listen, thank you so much for being with us. Look forward to talking to you next week. Hope everybody will rejoin us. Remember, we're archived on our homepage so you can listen anytime. Have a good week and take care of yourself.
Thanks, Mike.